Welcome to the Imagine Israel podcast, brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington. Imagine Israel is the initiative of the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington, connecting Washingtonians to Israel and Israelis through the lens of social change. With every Imagine Israel podcast, we get to meet innovative Israeli influencers and changemakers, people addressing social and economic challenges in Israel. We'll hear from people whose lives and whose work intersect as they address issues in Israeli society. And I'm your host, Robbie Grindgrass, and I'm coming to you from Makom, the Israel Education Lab of the Jewish Agency for Israel. So, Washington, Imagine Israel is really excited to announce that we're taking our podcast to the next level by making you a part of it. So far, you've gotten to hear me conduct conversations with amazing, innovative Israeli influencers across a plethora of social justice issues. So I've been asking these people questions that we've hoped might interest you in Washington. But now, Imagine Israel wants to bring you even closer inside these encounters. We want you inside the conversations themselves, inside the podcast. So starting from now, the Imagine Israel podcast is going to include your voice in the conversations. As you're about to hear, I'm going to be talking with Oshra Friedman, an amazing activist of Ethiopian origin. But in addition to my questions, you're also going to hear a couple of folks from Washington asking their own questions that Oshra will answer. And how's this going to work in the future? Pretty simple. Just think about what are your questions about Israeli society, about social justice in Israel, and just record yourself asking that very question. Make sure to introduce yourself with your name and city beforehand, and then just send the voice recording straight over to us as an attachment to an email. Just send it over to, this is the address, Imagine Israel, that's all one word, imagineisrael@shalomdc.org. imagineisrael@shalomdc.org. And then just tune in to the next Imagine Israel podcast for a chance to hear an Israeli innovator of social change answer your question. So we're really looking forward to hearing from you and making your voice heard. And of course, if you don't want to send in a recording of your own voice, but you're still curious about a certain aspect of Israel, you're welcome just to write out your question, complete with your name and city, and I'll read it out for you. But for now, let's meet Oshra Friedman, a fantastic, charismatic woman who's been an activist all her life. She originally hails from Ethiopia, and I went over to her place at the Krayot, area between Haifa and Akko, to hear Oshra's story and her insights into Israeli society. Oshra Friedman.
That's me.
Lovely to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too.
So, Oshra, is that the name that your parents gave you?
No, my Amharic name is Ye'uv Mert, which means the best of all. Ah. I'm the youngest from 13 kids.
Wow.
Yes. And my name, the name Oshra, I got from a bus driver when I was a new immigrant.
Explain that.
I was on my way to absorption center, and when we got there and I was smiling and laughing all the time, so the bus driver said, okay, you should call her Oshra. And that's it. And since
because
I got
Oshra
it.
Oshra comes from joy.
Joy and happiness. Yeah, definitely.
And you happily took that and let go of your original name?
No, actually my parents still call me in my Amharic name, my original name, but I'm completely love my name. It's me. It's really me.
Because the Zionist story is full of people who have changed their names when they've arrived in Israel, and for some of them it's an upgrade, and for some it's a loss.
I think I didn't make any big issue of it because, yes, a name is very important, but it's what you made of it. It was me. It fits me. I didn't need to change anything. It didn't change anything that I was before or I could become in the future. And as long as I remember where I come from, it didn't bother me at all.
So where do you come from?
I was born in Ethiopia in a very small village next to Gondar, and I immigrated to Israel when I was 7. And that's it. And since then, I'm here in Israel.
And so you have memories of Ethiopia?
Oh, yes, of course. I remember what I did when I was 3 and when I was 5. I knew what my job was in the community.
What was it?
I had 3 different jobs. Every single day, I took lunch to my dad and my brothers where they were working in the farm. I took care of my nieces, and I brought water 3 times a day from the river. So, you know, you can use for cook and drinking and stuff. My childhood back in Ethiopia was the most happiest childhood that you can ever imagine. Free, no worries, even though we knew that Jewish and we weren't able to talk about it. But I think I was the most free person as you can imagine. And then my whole life turned up and changed when I was, I think, 5 and a half. And when my parents decided that we're going to do the journey to Jerusalem. Yeah, and we started the journey to Jerusalem. We walked for 3 weeks back and forth. It took us even months to get to Sudan because we weren't able to go. My dad got sick on the way. And after, I think, 3 months, we arrived to the refugee camp in Sudan. We stayed there for about 9-10 months.
As a 7-year-old, were you not all the way along the line saying, what on earth are we doing, Mum and Dad? Why are we leaving my happy place?
No, actually, I saw my journey as kind of an adventure. I knew that we're gonna do it anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, my dad used to talk about it all the time, that one day we're going to leave the village and go to Jerusalem. I knew that something new is going to happen, probably something better. Even though sometimes I got so upset because we saw people dying on the way, children are starving, and even families going back to the village. But I always look up at my parents' eyes and I knew that there is hope because they know that this is something that we need to do. And if they are not going to change their minds, so who am I going to do it?
And you already had a couple of brothers over there.
And 3 of my brothers already did the journey before we did, even though we haven't heard anything from them. We even didn't know if they arrived to Jerusalem safely. Yeah, so we
did. When you say did the journey, was there a concept like that of the journey?
When you say the journey, it's something that people plan for years and months. You know, I was 7, but they've been like 60 and 50, and they still were waiting forward to Jerusalem.
Was coming.
Yes. So that's journey. I see it as something that you do physically and also mentally and emotionally, which people don't understand how those 3 combines together to explain what a journey means.
Sure.
I mean, I've been walking for weeks. I even can't ask my children to walk for 5 minutes to school. So imagine.
And presumably also a spiritual journey. I mean, yes. Were your parents religious?
Yes. Yes, it is. You know what? You remind me something. I remember that one day it was Friday night and we were so confused because we, the children, we didn't know the dates and the hours and whatever it is. And I remember it was Friday night and everybody was standing and praying. And the guide, he was afraid that the soldiers from Ethiopia will find out that we are praying and singing and stuff. Uh-huh. And that was that moment that everybody was standing on the face to Jerusalem. Huh. And actually praying by silence without saying any words. And you could feel the harmony in that. Uh-huh. And it was amazing. For me, it was amazing. So.
And it gives such a different picture of in every synagogue, people pray towards Jerusalem. Right. But the idea of doing that, facing the place where you're going, where you're on a journey, physically, spiritually, emotionally, towards.
Yes.
In silence.
Yes. And then in the end of it, say, we are doing it. Our dream is going to come true.
You were 10 months in the
refugee camp
in
Sudan.
In Sudan. And then airplanes came?
Angels
with wings?
I don't know. I always say it's like a bird that opened her stomach so people can go through. I remember that night that my dad said, it's going to happen tomorrow night. It's going to happen tomorrow mm-hmm. night. And we were responsible to take care of other kids.
The I was taking ones. Care.
Yeah, so you don't lose anybody. And they just pushed us into a truck and they brought us in the middle of nowhere. And there was a plan. They were supposed to take us to Jerusalem. But still, I remember that moment because still when we get into the plan, even though we were happy because we know, you know, a man came and he said, in 5 hours, you're going to be in Jerusalem, which is, it seems like so easy. We worked for months and now you're talking for 5 hours, so flying. And as a child, we were happy and we were smiling, but our parents were still holding their breath because they didn't know if that's going to be real. Until we land there, we are not going to smile. We are not going to show any happiness because we are still on the journey.
Still going.
Yes. And we landed in Jerusalem. Even before that, you know, when we were on the air, a man came to the middle of the plan and he was fat and he was white. And we were so amazed. That was my first meeting with a white man. But it didn't amaze me that his color is different. What amazed me is that he was speaking my language. And he was explaining, welcome to Jerusalem. And
what, he was speaking Amharic?
He was speaking Amharic. Amazing, amazing. And after 5 hours, we landed in Jerusalem, which was very, very exciting thing. I remember all the elders getting out of the plane, landing to the ground and kissed the land. And we, the kids, were so excited because we went to find the gold that everybody was talking about. But there was no gold. So we came back to the parents and said, why you are kissing the land? I mean, you haven't kissed us for a year when we were on the journey. But and I remember my mom says, one day you'll understand what it means when someone says, my dream come true. Mm-hmm. And she was right. She was right. So it wasn't Jerusalem, it was Ben Gurion Airport. And after that, they took us on a bus to Absorption Center to Ashkelon for a week. And then we moved to Netanya.
And so you went down south and then you went slightly north of Tel Aviv.
Yes, I grew up in Netanya in the center. So.
And how did Netanya people cope with black people walking around the streets?
When I got to school, I was amazed. I was amazed that, first of all, when you take a look on the white kids, they have even different colors. I mean, there is a blonde, there is black hair and stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And for them, it was something also different because they keep touching me to see if my color is going to get off.
You're kidding.
Yes. And I even remember, like, one of my friends in the class tried to paint me with a white color to see how long it's going to stay. It was so funny. But you know what? It goes to the both way because I've been asking them questions as much as they ask me questions. And once you know each other and get to know about each other's culture, you realize that, yes, there's people in different colors and with different cultures and even different thoughts and beliefs. And Jewish can be in different colors also. Mm-hmm. And once you get to realize that, you get along with each other. Children is easy to change and educate. Mm-hmm. But the parent is the hardest thing. I remember that I've been invited by one of the kids to their house. And the mother, she said, when you go to the shower, is the water still stay on your body or you just get off? I mean, stupid questions. But I understand that. Mm-hmm. And bringing someone to my house is asking my parents actually to avoid the culture, the food and the drink and whatever it is, the way they used to have hospitality in the house and bring something that is more Israeli. So it wouldn't feel weird and different. And in years, you learn that you should be proud of yourself and where you come from and who you are and not to change yourself in order to become more Israeli because...
So when you were a kid, you were trying to fit in. And
I did horrible things in order to fit in. I stopped speaking my language. I spoke only Hebrew. I was terribly rude to my parents, which is not accepted in my country and my culture.
I also noticed you don't have much of an accent in your Hebrew.
No, I don't. Even though I speak three languages, I don't. So you actually hide everything that you... I never brought any one of my friends to my parents' house because my parents refused to wear something different or to do something different. So I was like, okay, save that. Don't bring anybody. Just stay out and stuff.
What do you mean wear something different?
I mean, you don't have to wear your clothes like Ethiopian clothes. You can wear something different, like more Israeli, but... It's so hard to change. And in years after years, I realized that I was lost because I came when I was young. Mm-hmm. My parents still, even though if they are here physically, they live on the way they used to live back in Ethiopia. And I came to Israel and I have two different worlds.
Two different worlds. Right.
How you make sure that you will be able to survive and make sure that you have your own identity.
Sure. Did your parents ever land?
I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know.
Have they been able to function in Israel, speak Hebrew, get a job? My
dad passed away 13 years ago. He refused to speak Hebrew.
Refused to speak Hebrew?
Yes. He refused to speak Hebrew. He always spoke Amharic. You know, when he got here and he retired, which is something that you don't have in Ethiopia. You don't retire from anything. And when he got old, as the country suggested, he said, so what am I? Who am I? I'm not important anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started to work in different things. And then he realized that he's actually out of doing anything. I mean, he's useless. He's not important. He's not the head of the family anymore because he retired and he's old.
And his daughter's being rude to him.
Yes, exactly. And he also understands that as long as he try, he will never be able to speak Hebrew or be able to fit the Israel society. So he said, okay, I'll speak Amharic only. And that way I can keep the culture and the language for my kids and my grandchildren, etc. But he never settled down.
Mm-hmm.
My mom, on the other hand, still goes to Ulpan.
A state-funded Hebrew course in Ulpan.
Which is weird. I always say that she'll have her PhD the next years. She caught up Hebrew very fast, and she became more independent. I always ask her, do you want to go back?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever want to go back? Not forever, but even for a visit. And she always say, I have nothing to do there.
Mm-hmm.
I have everything that I need here. So I think she adjusted more than my dad. But still, she had the feeling that the culture is not important for the Israel society. People don't even want to know about the Ethiopian culture. For the past 5 years that they have been doing so many activities about this culture, she became like proud to take part. She even make gala evenings and dinners and stuff for the community. And she feels like she's having a very important part in the Israel society, bringing her culture into.
And here's a question from somebody from Washington.
Hi, my name is Danny from the District of Columbia, and my question is, why have Ethiopian traditions and cultures become more at the forefront of Israeli society in the past 3 to 5 years?
I think it was because we as the Ethiopian community didn't do enough to bring it to the front or force the Israeli society,
Mm-hmm.
The Israel society to come and be part of and know about us. And what happened on the past years is that even though, you know, people are talking about, you know, racism and stereotypes and whatever you call it, I always say that it's ignorance because people don't know each other. But it goes to the both sides. The Ethiopian community have become open. They actually welcome everyone who wants to know. People got their own identity and they are proud of it and they don't want to let it go. And the Israeli society is more open-minded because they see us, which I couldn't say a few years ago. Even when I got married to the most Ashkenazi person.
Yeah, I noticed your surname didn't sound all that Ethiopian either.
I felt like I need to prove to everyone that I made it by my own. I'm a very hard worker and stuff. Today, it's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious. So I always say it takes time to people to realize that whatever you thought is weird is actually not anymore. And it happens only because you are open-minded to know and ask. And the other side is open to answer and reply.
And just another quick question from Washington.
Hi, this is PJ from Gaithersburg, Maryland. My question is, how do you overcome prejudice and racism against the Ethiopian community in Israel?
I would say that we all racist. So each one of us is racist.
Uh-huh.
Each one of us, all humanity, all of us are racist. The difference is once you know that you are, what are you going to do about it? Are you willing to study and learn and ask and change your behavior? Or are you going to be like the most outstanding person by showing your haters to the other side?
I suppose there's also to do with power as well, isn't it? A racist policeman has more chance of upsetting even a racist kid from Ethiopian background.
Of course, it's also got to do with power, but power is something that you can earn. I mean, yes, the government can give you the legitimate to be the most powerful person or department, as is the police, as the justice system. But we have the power to change that. You cannot sit aside and let it happen. And yes, is that mean to work with the police departments? Yes, go and work with them. Because that policeman who have been raised in a racism house wouldn't change his mind just in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
He got to know and study. You have to teach him. Which is so weird and bizarre to say, because it's not my job to educate policemen.
Yes, it's not like you have a racism problem.
Yes, I don't have that problem. He's the one. But once you show him how different you can act, how the cultures are different, how you can work with him in order to see the whole picture. Because sometimes we assume that people know what we think and how we feel and how we behave or where we're coming from, but they don't. We just assume. If you are not talking about it, if you don't show me the whole picture, if I don't know your background, your history, your culture, I wouldn't know what something specific that I will do is going to do to you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our job, to tell you that there is no racism in Israel. Oh no, I'm not going to say that. It's happening, and it's happening every minute, every single day, even when we are sitting now, right now, someone is beating or cursing the other outside. It happens. It's our job to show that we can live differently. We can change the system. Changing the system means if there is more officers, Ethiopian officers in the police department, you're going to change the way you behave.
Mm-hmm.
If we have more teachers, we will be able to change the system. You know, when I go to interview and I send my resume as freedman, I don't write that I was born in Ethiopia, and I even don't write that I'm married and having three kids, okay? But when I get there, and I always come right on time,
mm-hmm.
and it said, "Oh, you're freedman?" I said, "Yes, do you have a problem with that?" You see, people get shocked, but it's our job to change that, to change that.
Was there never a point, even as a kid, that you got angry? Like, was there a point when you suddenly, when there was a shift and you realized that it's my job to change the way that other people are seeing me? Was there ever?
I never get angry on that issue, because getting angry, it means that it hurts me. I don't get angry. I know that I have to work twice harder than anybody else to get everywhere that I want to. I know it. That's true. My skin color is not going to disappear no matter how times you're going to paint it or try to take it off. But the way I think, what I study, what I accomplish is something that needs to be every day even more and more and more in a higher level, so I will be able to make it, because I know this is me. This is me. Nobody can change that. What do I do with that? I need to go, you know, and succeed in every single way, not to let that voice of, oh, you are Ethiopian, you're probably like that, and you're black, and you are woman, and so on, and especially mother. And so, I'm not going to listen to that voice. That voice doesn't exist.
So what are you busy with?
I'm having my own TV show on Challenge 10. I'm writing a lot in different blogs and in articles. And I actually been working in the last couple of years in different organizations, nonprofit organizations, as resource development. This is what I do best. Uh-huh. I raise money from good people to a very good cause.
What causes?
Students, single mothers, living together as Jewish and Arabs, communities, education, welfare.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so your work is to do with also helping the community that's emerged from Ethiopia? Or are you looking beyond that nowadays?
I work with the whole system of Israeli society, not mm-hmm. just the Ethiopians. I mean, Ethiopians community is part of the Israeli society. So I work with every one of them. I don't specific do something for the Ethiopian. It's enough. No more different programs, no more different systems, or take all the part of the society and, you know, make it like a catalog. You can open this page, you find the Ethiopian, you open this page and you find the Arabs and stuff. No, we live in one country. Most of us deal with the same issues, maybe in different ways. 50% of the kids are born in Israel. Mm-hmm. So they are Israeli for life. I mean, they don't need a different system. They don't need different programs. If I was dealing with issues when I was a new immigrant of finding my identity, most of the young kids don't need that. They are not dealing with those issues. They are dealing with different things. Violence, racism. They want to get to the army, very high-level jobs and units. Mm-hmm. This is what they need. It's different issues.
So what's really interesting is that for over 10 years, the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington has supported programs benefiting an under-resourced Ethiopian community in the city of Beit Shemesh, and remains the primary funder of these programs. So Federation currently provides $116,000 to the Zinman Matnas, the Zinman Community Center, to provide after-school youth outreach centers for Ethiopian youth at risk, and an after-school scholastic support program for 4th to 6th graders. And through these programs, children and teens receive mentoring, leadership training, socialization, academic support, and connections to both Jewish and Ethiopian ethnic heritage. Now, what's really interesting, apropos Oshra's point, is that the program, whilst aimed for Ethiopian kids, the program is open to all kids in the area, not just those of Ethiopian origin. So in direct alignment with what Oshra's saying, the Federation is backing Ethiopians in society, not in separation from it. The Zinman Center has received tremendous success, not only in providing the children and teens with a safe and supported place to hang out after school, but also to help them thrive and prepare for successful futures by developing leadership skills and personal empowerment. You should also know that for 16 years, Federation has supported JDC's PACT program in Afula. PACT is Parents and Children Together. So PACT provides support to Ethiopian Israeli children in Israel. PACT helps close educational gaps through individualized learning programs, as well as wraparound programs like parent education workshops. Federation currently grants $80,000 to this program and is in the process of handing over the full operation of this program to the Afula municipality so that it's a locally owned project and it'll continue to grow and develop. Is this the kind of line that you lead in your TV show?
Our TV show talks about the issues that the Israeli society is dealing, the difference between the north, south, and the center, and the difference between education in periphery and the center of Israel, and different societies, genders, justice, which is important, social justice most of the time. And I think on that program, we'll raise up the issues so everybody will know that there's things that we need to do in order to improve our society, and not only sectors of the society, the whole society. And everyone who's coming to the program, whether they are Knesset members or CEOs or nonprofit organizations or even, let's say, mayors of cities, everyone raised up the questions of what we can do more. And how different is the way the government thinks and the way the municipality thinks, and how things are supposed to work in order to give a very good support to the community, the residents. The reason that I love that show is just because we actually discuss the reality in our country, that sometimes we are so busy of doing everyday thing and we forget that there is others who need some more attention. More attention in order to give them more support or even raise up a question. Questions of safety, education, welfare, whatever. But it brings the issues up to the air so everybody can think about it. And maybe one day we will be able to be part of the solution. I don't know.
Oshra Friedman, thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure. Bye, Washington.
And so I say goodbye to Oshra, full of respect and full of the next round of questions. I guess a rich conversation with a person is always that conversation that leads to the next conversation. Because I grew up on what I guess is the old inspiring narrative of the Ethiopian Aliyah, the miraculous rescue of Ethiopian Jews from famine. And I remember learning about the challenges involved in the acclimatization of these new African immigrants to Israel. But Oshra is moving on. As she says, most young Ethiopian Israelis were born here in Israel. So the key issues that they're facing are totally different from those of their immigrant parents and grandparents. Nowadays, their challenges are addressed with heads held high, with responsibility, and with a sense of empowerment. Or at least they are, as long as they make sure to take advice from one Oshra Friedman. And thank you for listening. This podcast, part of the Imagine Israel Initiative, is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington and hosted and produced by me, Robbie Greengrass of Macom. You can find us on shalomdc.org/ Imagine Israel Podcast.